Welcome to the Religious Feminism Podcast. I'm your host, April Young Bennett. Today is a special episode of the podcast. As I've mentioned before, I'm a Mormon advocate, and a big change is happening in the Mormon church right now. Our president and prophet of the church, Thomas S. Monson, recently passed away at the age of 90. And that means we're going to receive a new president. A Mormon president is revered as a prophet, seer, and revelator. So Mormons hold him in reverence as the Pope in Catholicism. And as is true for Catholics, the Mormon leader is always a man, because women are banned from the Mormon priesthood. However, unlike a pope, there is no election and no surprises when a new Mormon prophet succeeds. The new Mormon prophet will always be the most senior apostle. That's the person who has been serving their lifelong term as a Mormon apostle for the longest number of years. And generally that means that person is a very senior citizen, which is certainly true in this case. Our new president will be Russell M. Nelson, who is currently 93 years old. However, I should add that he seems unusually healthy and very spry for a man of his age. And that new person is unlikely to make big waves. As a senior apostle, they have been already serving amicably with the previous president for decades, and they tend to agree on most issues. However, every Mormon president has their own personality and their own priorities, and as some of the women who contributed to this podcast have pointed out, some of these new prophets have made important and unexpected progressive changes. When I heard that Thomas S. Monson had died, I have to admit that my first feeling was of relief for him. I feel kind of bad that as Mormons, we work our leaders until they die and allow them no retirement. I hope that someday retirement will be a possibility within our church, because it does feel quite cruel the way we make them work until they die. One thing that gives me hope is recently within the Catholic Church, Pope Benedict introduced the concept that a pope could retire in 2013, and so that was a big change for them, that they have accomplished well. The transition has gone smoothly, as far as we can tell. And within our own church, we have also experienced such changes. The next high-ranking Mormons after apostles, that are called 70s, had a retirement age introduced to them in 1978. And someday, for the benefit of our beloved apostles, I hope that they have the opportunity to retire too, so that they don't have to begin such a long and difficult job at age 93 like President Nelson will be doing. Today I invited some advocates for women within the Mormon Church to talk about President Monson and his legacy, and also to look forward to our new president, President Nelson, and talk about some of their hopes and their concerns about what his presidency may bring us. I'll start with myself. Personally, I am so grateful to President Monson for his emphasis on caring for the poor. I could always depend on him not to talk about the culture wars in his talks, but rather to talk about the need for kindness, the need for charity, what we called pure religion. And he even made that a permanent institutional change by declaring it one of the few official missions of the church to care for the poor and needy. Another thing that he did that was really important to me is that he lowered the age for women missionaries to serve to the age of 19. For decades, young men were allowed to serve as LDS missionaries at the age of 19, while women had to wait until the age of 21. His predecessor had announced that the reason why they had done this for so many years was to keep the number of female missionaries small, and he had made it a point that he did not want very many female missionaries. When President Monson changed the missionary age for women, it was a signal that he really did welcome the service of women as missionaries, and he didn't want to discourage them, and I really appreciated that. There were some disappointments during his presidency. At one point, President Monson had the opportunity to add 3 new apostles to his quorum. That's a very unusual opportunity in the church. There are only 15 apostles total, and apostles, since they serve for life, are only replaced when they pass away. So it was unusual that he had that opportunity, and many people were hoping that with 3 new apostles added, the quorum would become much more diverse, instead of continuing to be composed of entirely white men. For unfortunately, we can't even hope for a woman to be included. But he chose to add 3 new white men, and the quorum is still all white. And so that was definitely concerning to many of us. A particularly hard thing for me during his tenure is that I was one of the organizers of Ordained Women, a group that is asking the First Presidency and the Quorum of the 12 Apostles to considering adding women to the Mormon priesthood. And I had honestly hoped that because President Monson seemed so kind and seemed to care about women so much, that he would be receptive to hearing our concerns, even if he didn't act on them and ordain women. And that wasn't the case at all. His administration wouldn't even grant us one-hour meetings with lower representatives to talk to them about our concerns. And he approved several efforts to punish ordained women advocates for expressing our opinions. So now we do have a new president who's going to be ordained the prophet soon, and that will be President Nelson. As I look forward to his presidency, one thing that I'm glad about is that he really does seem concerned about empowering Mormon women. That seems to be something that's on his radar, something that he talks about in his sermons, which is not true necessarily of all of the apostles. And so I appreciate that, and I'm glad that he's thinking about that. I do think that his understanding of female empowerment may be a bit limited from my perspective as a feminist. Often in his sermons, he uses examples of women who defend unpopular opinions of the brethren as examples of female empowerment, instead of talking about women who promote their own ideas. Also concerning to many advocates is often in these sermons, when he praises women for defending policies of the brethren, he's defending them for praising policies that are distinctly anti-LGBTQ. And so, of course, advocates are concerned about how these people will be treated under his leadership. So I'm going to turn the time over to some other women who would also like to talk about President Thomas S. Monson's legacy and about the prospect of President Russell M. Nelson as the new president of the church. First, we'll hear from Carolina Allen. Carolina Allen is a native of Brazil and a United States immigrant, and she founded the organization Big Ocean Women, which works to raise the voices of mothers in the public conversation. Then we will hear from Carolyn Pearson, who is an author and a poet, and who is an advocate for women and members of the LGBTQ community. Her most recent book, The Ghost of Eternal Polygamy, focuses on the need for the Mormon Church to rid ourselves of policies and theology that still remain from our polygamous past. And finally, we'll hear from Brindis Roberts, who is currently serving as chair of Ordained Women, and who is also one of the founders of FemWalk, Feminist Women of Color, a blog for Mormon women of color.
Hello, and thanks for having me on this religious feminism podcast. My name is Carolina Allen, and I am the founder and CEO of the maternal feminist organization, Big Ocean. And we are women empowered by our faith, our deep connections to family and ancestors, and our identities as mothers. Weighing in a little bit on President Monson's passing and on his legacy to me personally, I can't help but be reflective of his life of service, as so many Latter-day Saints the world over. But really, I am thinking about his life of service as a team effort by him and Francis. There's no doubt in my mind that President Monson would not have been able to serve in the beautiful ways that he did without Francis likewise serving in very powerful ways within their family and to him personally. She is inspiring to me because I know that as I build an interdependent relationship with my family members, that the ripple effects are tremendous. So she exemplifies that to me. The entire Monson family exemplifies this idea of family capital, and that service doesn't happen in isolated ways, that for others to serve, they likewise need to be served, and that whether the service is visible or less visible, it is equal and it is powerful. So I'm very, very grateful for Francis's legacy as well. She was equal in my eyes with the service that was rendered to our entire global family. And I am very grateful for that legacy as well. I know that President Monson will be missed. I personally feel as though a beautiful, bright light was extinguished, and I feel a personal call to shine a little brighter, to perhaps make up for that loss. I am eager and anxiously awaiting this next conference where I can raise my right arm to the square and sustain a new prophet and seer and revelator, President Russell M. Nelson. I am so grateful for the ways in which his particular words spoke to me in a very, very dark time in my life when I was feeling overwhelmed and incredibly burdened by my personal calling in life, and I was confused and feeling inadequate as to how I was going to accomplish it. And when I remember hearing his talk, A Plea to My Sisters, it was an answer to my prayers. And I just remember sobbing and being in a room with my children and my husband, and all of us started to cry together because we knew that we were being given essentially an apostolic blessing, that we could indeed magnify our influence, and that we had all of the tools readily available for us to do that, and that I could personally move forward in faith, and that I would be supported. And I knew, when I looked at my husband and saw him crying, he knew the same thing. And it was a shift in our relationship where I knew that he got it, that it was a mutual way in which we could support one another, and that it was possible. He had very demanding church callings. I had a new nonprofit that I was organizing, and at that moment when we heard that talk together, it anchored us in courage. It anchored us that we knew that God would help us accomplish all that we were being asked to do. And with that said, I'm eager to support and contribute. I have faith that whatever it is that we are being asked to accomplish in our lives for God's work, whatever that may be, I know that we will be given the tools to do that. And I am grateful for the words of President Nelson that reminded me of that. And I'm eager to support and sustain him.
Hi, this is Carolyn Pearson speaking to you on a rainy day in Walnut Creek, California. I'm glad to give a few thoughts on the subject of the transition in our first presidency. President Monson, I recall, vein, as moments in the life of a man who taught us a great deal about how to be compassionate in serving one another and looking out for those who are the least of us. That's what I'll remember from him. And actually, my church experience is not centered really in what happens in Salt Lake City, but what happens in my own ward. But as I look forward to the time that we'll have with President Nelson in charge, I'm certain that he has a lot of experience to bring to this and a lot of great intentions. I find that personally I have a little bit of reservation about a couple of things that are very, very dear to me. One of the subjects that I have addressed a great deal and that I feel very strongly about is moving the church forward to better accepting our LGBTQ couples who choose to be in a loving relationship. And I believe that the church in general, the membership, are consistently moving in that direction. I know that at the present moment, Elder Nelson is not. I know that when what we call the exclusion policies came out just over 2 years ago, that he was the one that made sure we understood that they were not policies, that they were a revelation. And as he gave the particulars of how all that happened, I was aware that they did not entirely match the stories that I have heard from a number of people who are very close to the situation. Policies did not come smoothly or with all people on board at all. But never mind that. I'm hoping for the best on that particular subject from him. And the other subject that I have some feeling about is my devotion to examining the inequality in the sealing practices and the ongoing concept that we have of anticipating eternal polygamy. And my recent book has the title, The Ghost of Eternal Polygamy, which I know is something that brings a lot of harm to many, many women in the church and also to many men. The troublesome thing here for me is that I know that Elder Nelson is already a committed eternal polygamist, having had sealed to him a much younger woman after his wife passed away. So that is the reality that we are experiencing here with a new personality to be in charge. But I have hope that he will be able to find a way to respond to both of these issues that I have brought up. In my book, The Ghost of Eternal Polygamy, I have a really impressive and I think encouraging quote from President Kimball, speaking about, well, in an interview that he gave to the Church News, he spoke of the intensity of his prayers prior to receiving the answer that, yes, this is something that you should move forward with in giving priesthood to black males in the church. So I'm quoting from him now. He said, "I had a great deal to fight, of course, myself largely, because I had grown up with this thought that Negroes should not have the priesthood, and I was prepared to go all the rest of my life till my death and fight for it and defend it as it was." So I think we can have a hope that for all subjects that will be considered, particularly these two for me, that I have some significant consideration about, that there is always a good possibility that the president, prophet in charge, will be able to put aside the things that they grew up with and seek sincerely for new light and guide us in a path that is truly one that the Lord would have us follow. So those are my hopes for this coming shift in the leadership of our church.
My name is Brendis Roberts. I live in Atlanta, Georgia. I am an adult convert to The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, having joined the church exactly 10 years ago today, on January 13, 2008. Among other callings, I have been privileged to serve as the Relief Society president in my ward. I am the chair of the Executive Board of Ordained Women and one of the founding members of FEMWOC, Feminist Mormon Women of Color. I join with my fellow Mormons in paying tribute to President Monson. His lifetime of service to those in need, to those who were lonely, and to those who were sorrowful was a shining example and a beautiful testimony of not just saying, but actually living the words of our baptismal covenants, and stands as a constant source of inspiration to me. As the church undergoes this transition in leadership, my heart and mind are full of hopes and prayers. It is my hope and prayer that our leaders will recognize that our lay ministry is ill-equipped to deal with issues such as child abuse, spousal abuse, and domestic violence, and that they will move swiftly to make necessary and appropriate revisions in church policies concerning the handling of those issues. It is my hope and prayer that church leaders will recognize the inappropriateness of having grown men conduct closed-door interviews of unaccompanied children and young people, and will move swiftly to stop that practice. It is my hope and prayer that the church will remove the barriers, be they structural or personnel related, that prevent members from bringing their concerns and questions to church leaders. It is my hope and prayer that our leaders will move swiftly to erase any language in church publications, or any images in church buildings, or any remnants of any church teachings that in any way perpetuate the notion that skin color is any indication of righteousness. It is my hope and prayer that the church will issue an apology to all of us of African descent for the imposition of the priesthood and temple ban. It is my hope and prayer that our church leaders will act swiftly to remove any barriers, including the November 2015 policy, that prevent any of the children of our heavenly parents from fully participating in church ordinances or from serving in any capacity into which they are called by our heavenly parents. Finally, it is my hope and prayer that church leaders will do everything that needs to be done, including ordaining women, for the church to reflect the words in 2 Nephi 26 chapter 33rd verse, that all are alike unto God. What a prize.